FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is the last day of February 2017. So the Trump agenda, is it moving ahead? Is it stuck in the mud? Where is it going? Well, tonight is Trump's speech, and perhaps we'll know more. With us is Michael Stumo, head of Coalition for a Prosperous America. Michael, it's great to have you back on the show. And where's the Trump agenda heading, especially on trade? Is he going to be able to pull it off, or are the globalists going to stop him dead in his tracks?
I think he'll be able to pull off quite a bit of it. He doesn't yet have the whole team in place, but of course he pulled out of the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was a big globalist agreement that was a big victory. We'd been working on that for 2 years. So we're happy for that to go away, but he still has part of his team yet to go. But I'm, you know, seeing some good things in the team that he has in place. A couple I have questions about, but you know, we'll see.
So, I mean, it's taken him quite a while to get his cabinet together, though, hasn't it?
Right. And there's been, you know, a few reasons. One is, of course, Democratic opposition, which, you know, with all due respect, it does mirror, you know, we've seen the opposition going the other way, too. So it's not terribly unexpected. But also you have, I've actually seen the financial disclosure forms that people need to fill out and disclose where they have their investments and that sort of thing. And if you're a billionaire like Wilbur Ross, who was confirmed last night, it actually takes quite a bit of time, A, to fill out those forms or have your attorneys and accountants do it, and B, to give the committee time to review them. So, you know, Ross was delayed not because of opposition, but because, you know, he has very complex financial interests.
Oh, for sure. And he's probably got an army of lawyers and accountants, or probably had an army of lawyers and accountants filling them out, you know, paying them $1,000 an hour for the privilege, right?
Yeah, I don't think he had the solo practitioner in downtown Yorktown, Pennsylvania do it.
Yeah, well, at least then he could plead ignorance when it got screwed up, because those forms are complicated, too. I mean, you know, just when Trump had to fill them out to run for president, I mean, this has become an exercise in idiocy, because the forms really don't tell them what they need to know or what the public needs to know. They're technical in nature, and, you know, you get to disclose things without disclosing them effectively. Some things you do come out in the process, but a lot of things never come out.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, there's some rules against, you know, in various contexts, if you've represented foreign governments before the Congress of the U.S., that's something we'd want to know. Bob Lighthizer, who is the nominee for U.S. Trade Representative, has, which we like. We, you know, we support him. Mm-hmm. But he has represented Brazil once in a negotiation as a private attorney. Certainly, we know that the Chinese government retains a lot of lobbyists, and they have to disclose, you know, under a Foreign Lobbyist Act. So there's certain things we would want to know if they're compromised on their interests. So I don't have a huge problem with some of it. So that's what's actually delaying Lighthizer, because they might have to amend a law for him.
Yeah, well, that's been done before. So what about the whole Russia thing? Is this just a red herring, a pig in a poke, or is there some legitimate concern there?
Well, I'm not the biggest expert on the Russia thing. But I know that, you know, his National Trade Council guy, because Trump formed a brand new National Trade Council and put a guy by the name of Peter Navarro in charge of it.
Right.
And he's pretty focused on, you know, the worst trade cheating countries like China. Russia is more of a pure foreign policy issue. It's not quite so much a trade issue, but China is, you know, of course, a huge trade issue. They make up one half of our trade deficit because of their trade cheating. So, but I don't know what to say on Russia, frankly.
Yeah, it seems to me the Democrats are screaming about it. They were probably the ones who were in business with them. And we know it from Uranium One that Hillary was the one that gave away 20% of the United States uranium reserves to Putin. So maybe they should start looking there before they go everywhere else. But hey, trade, I mean, look, a lot of factories have moved to Mexico. When NAFTA was passed way back when, during Clinton's term, the U.S. had a $1 billion trade surplus with Mexico. Now it's got a $160 trade deficit with Mexico and tens of thousands of jobs, particularly in the auto industry and allied industries, have gone to Mexico. So does Trump have a point there?
Oh, yes. You know, we always heard from, you know, Clinton and then Bush and then Obama that it's a global world. You got to get with the program. It doesn't matter where things are made. It'll just be, you know, if it's more efficient to be, you know, somewhere else, then that's okay with us. And, you know, Trump has brought the economic nationalism back where it's best to. You know, we want to have the supply chains in our country. He's done, of course, a bit of naming and shaming in the case of, you know, Carrier and the like. And with this border adjustable tax kind of debate in tax reform is another way to put, a, you know, tax goods coming in and give a subsidy to exports going out. But there's definitely, you know, there's definitely a point there. If you bring, we had a $760 billion trade deficit in goods last year. And if we just balance that, that doesn't mean being an isolationist, but work to get, you know, more of the goods produced here. So we sell as, you know, we supply our own market and we sell as much as we buy. There's, you know, 4 or 5 million jobs in that package over time. And that's a bigger pro jobs program than almost anything else they're discussing.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's a huge amount. And we've got this like mercantilistic mindset with a number of our trading partners. Rather than win-win, it's winner take all, especially with China. We just can't have that mindset anymore. It's got to balance out. So that means let the currencies float and let it be, you know, get rid of these unknown or behind the scenes trade restrictions that stop companies from buying American products. That it comes out to tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars a year in basically behind the scenes trade restrictions that keep us running deficits.
Right. You know, and one of the worst countries actually is Germany. They have a strategy and they do pretty well on their own. They have a strategy to be export oriented and to rely on U.S. consumption to supercharge their economy, even better or worse as the case may be in some ways as China. Actually, our biggest trade, countries we have trade deficits with right now are China, Mexico, Japan, and Germany. Mm-hmm. And it's some of it is trade cheating. Some of it is, you know, some currency issues. Some of it is some other things, but we just can't hemorrhage. You know, 66% of our workforce doesn't have a 4-year degree, and we're not going to educate our way out of it and make everyone, you know, into a Wall Street, you know, finance trader or a lawyer. If you're going to govern, you've got to find a way to provide job opportunities for, you know, those 66%. And our labor force participation rate, which means the number of people employed versus the number of people who could be employed, has been tanking. It's down to 63%. It was right. About 10 points higher 10 years ago. So the unemployment rate is low, but that's because it doesn't count people who've just dropped out of the workforce because they can't find a job.
It's a fake number. Totally fake. Hey, so what about with Mexico? What are they going to do? They're kind of screwed because, look, they account for 2% of trade of the U.S.'s trade, but we account for 80% of their trade. So they're going to go trade with the Chinese, they think? I mean, they're just going to sell everything to the Chinese? They're kind of deluding themselves, aren't they? Right?
That's a very good point. I mean, we are the biggest market in the world. We have the market power to force fairness on others. And rather than relying on some multilateral global organizations like the WTO, we could just set fair rules ourselves and say, look, these are the conditions of trade with us. You play fair, or you don't get access to the market, or the cost of access is going to be higher. We'll play fair with you, but we're going to set the rules now, and we're going to balance. We're going to get rid of our trade deficit, because that's what, you know, free market economics expects, is balance, not these imbalances. And we're going to take our economy back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, so basically, you know, the deal with Mexico, maybe with Germany, we can exert some influence. I mean, Trump already said, hey, to BMW, if you think you're going to close your factory in the U.S. and ship it off to Mexico and then sell BMWs in the U.S. that you're making in Mexico, think again. And they're in a whole blather about that. So what about China? What are we going to do with China? Because that's the kind of thing that where wars get started. Happened with Japan in World War II.
Well, Japan had an imperialist policy, and Germany had an imperialist policy. You know, Japan invaded Manchuria and China, not because of trade, because they wanted to do empire building.
Yeah.
And so I hear the trade war stuff, and we look back in history and we really donoot see trade wars. Even Smoot-Hawley wasn't really a trade war. It was you know, something that happened after the Depression started for other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
People have heard of that sort of tariff. The thing about China, I mean, we said, well, let's let China into the WTO because they'll trade more freely. They'll want to be like us, and it will promote world peace. The same thing with Russia. In 2009 or 10 or somewhere, we let Russia in a few years later. And basically with China, we funded their military rise. So they are a geopolitical rival of us. The Chinese Navy is the second biggest in the world, et cetera. And they're making exorbitant claims to areas of the sea in the South China and East China Sea. So the WTO, you know, argument didn't really work out with China. It made them more, not less aggressive, because we financed their empire building wishes. Russia, of course, we harvested, you know, invasion of Ukraine, annexation of Crimea, and funny stuff in Syria, rather than, you know, more cooperation. So I haven't seen a lot of data that shows that any kind of trade agreements have a measurable effect on, you know, peaceable relations.
Yeah. So, and, you know, China routinely steals our intellectual property, patent theft. You know, they knock off our products. You know, they seem to be concerned now about designer handbags and designer goods. They seem to have cracked down on that. I was in China recently, and people are sneaking around doing that now. It's not out in the open. You know, watches, that type of thing. You know, Trump's got a point. He doesn't want Boeing opening a factory in China, because they're just going to steal the technology, which is what they've been doing all along. Is there going to be a confrontation here?
Well, that's why you actually want to use trade measures to discipline, because they're not warlike. You know, the IP, the cyber theft, you know, is actually a cyber battle that's slightly different. But, you know, we let China invest here or you know, buy our companies as freely as we do, you know, let the British do it.
Mm-hmm.
And China, if our companies want to invest there, they can't do so unless they joint venture with a Chinese company, which means you're transferring your technology there. They won't let you sell there unless you make it there, and they won't let you make it there unless you joint venture with their, you know, Chinese owned company. And in many cases, in certain targeted high tech markets, they won't even let you joint venture there unless you pledge to bring very interesting technology along with you.
Right.
Now, you know, In a strict, you know, reciprocity or reciprocal relationship, you know, we would never, you know, the Wall Street Journal would go nuts if we tried to do that here. But maybe we should consider doing it. Look, you can't invest here or access our market under better conditions than you allow access to your market. So we'll open up, but only as much as you do, in a demonstrable way. Not promise. We've heard the promises. But as soon as you start restricting in these ways, we're going to restrict you.
Yeah. A little reciprocity then, huh?
Yeah. It's legitimate. It's fair. So actually our board, we're having a board meeting today, and we're going to, you know, discuss, you know, some policies about foreign investment around the world only allowed to the extent those countries allow us to invest there. So peg it to their actual opening.
Uh-huh.
Because Vietnam's, you know, got their restrictions, India and the like, but the door's wide open here.
Yeah.
And it hasn't incentivized them to follow our lead. It's incentivized them to be strategic. And so, a little closer look is worthwhile.
We're certain. So there reason to be optimistic here?
Well, I think Trump has changed the conversation that it makes it in America is a good thing. It should be a national goal. The shaming and blaming thing, changes the conversation. It needs to be followed up by policies. I mean, with Mexico, one reason we have the deficit with Mexico is as soon as they cut tariffs when NAFTA was implemented in 94, they created a border adjustable tax, which is what is being talked about these days here, a VAT or a consumption tax. Mm. In that, we don't pay so much tariffs going into Mexico, but we have to pay at the border their VAT of 15%. So we're still paying about the same. And then when an auto parts company makes auto parts there and ships them to the U.S., they get a government check at 15% called a VAT rebate. So it's like a subsidy to the exports here. And so that's why the border adjustable debate with the tax reform is really important, because it addresses, 150 different countries who have this, their tariff replacement mechanisms, which we've never discussed before. It's important to equalize that to get to true free trade instead of manipulated trade.
Hey, one more question, Michael. The wall. So obviously it's going to be built. I never had any doubt, just like I had never had any doubt that Trump was going to be elected. So what's going to be the net result of the wall being built? Forget about who's paying for it, or for right now, eventually Mexico will. No doubt there. I mean, going to reduce the drug smuggling and the human smuggling, isn't it?
Hopefully it will. Frankly, with our organization, we don't do the immigration stuff much. We're bipartisan. But even our Democratic members are supporting, a lot of the Trump trade agenda. But on the wall, and we just hope it's going to be built with American-made products.
Well, I think, we didn't even talk about the pipelines, because really the U.S. and Canada seem to have a pretty equalized trade relationship, don't they?
Largely. Canada's not, but Canada has their own VAT. Called a goods and services tax, or a GST.
GST,
so
right.
When they cut their tariffs, they do have a GST, or something, and that can be anywhere from 8 to 15% going in. That, again, we haven't addressed, and so they did kind of a little Mexico thing. Now we do have a deficit with Canada. Most of it is fossil fuels, which is legitimate. It's a commodity that we add value to. Part of it's vehicles, and part of the vehicle issue is, again, the Canadian VAT. So there is some work to be done. They're not necessarily the big focus, but I'm going to be in D.C. I have been there saying, the border adjustability thing is a good idea. I think you're probably doing it a little bit wrongly, but there's a right way to do it. And so I'm hoping they'll listen.
Yeah. So, but I was going to say is those pipelines are going to have to be made with American steel.
Well, maybe. The problem with the trade agreements is that in the WTO is that as part of those trade agreements, we pledged to treat foreign products, including steel, as well as we do U.S. made. And so this steel could legitimately, under a Buy American program, come from other countries. And one thing we're urging the Trump administration to do is, pull out of those aspects of those trade deals that restrict us from buying American, because our Buy America laws right now are fake, because we are forced under the trade agreements to treat other countries' products the same as well as ours.
Right. But Trump specifically said in his executive orders that it's got to be made with American steel. So will he enforce it?
Well, I haven't read it, but if it says subject to our international obligations, that's what I want to look at. If it doesn't say subject to our international obligations, we still have federal regulations that govern, and the law does not say, and the executive order didn't overturn it, that we're not going to be buying foreign steel. So we need to watch that, and we need to overturn those rules, because executive order, it's good, but it's not enough. It doesn't change it yet.
So we would have to effectively withdraw from the WTO, or at least part of it.
Well, we wouldn't actually, because the WTO doesn't have those rules in the core agreement. There is a side agreement called the Agreement on Government Procurement. Mm-hmm. That side agreement says, oh, for when governments buy stuff, they have to treat other signatories, countries' products the same as domestic. Right. We have signed that, but it's a separate side agreement. Trump can unilaterally withdraw from that separate side agreement without withdrawing for the WTO. Okay. To me, that's a relatively easy lift.
Sure.
We're hoping he goes there, but hasn't yet.
Should we withdraw from the WTO here, Michael?
I've actually been having an email debate with a staffer today on that, saying it's worth considering doing it. We would have to, you know, there are some, we would have to take the position as the world's policeman on free and fair trade by using our power as the world's biggest market, consumer market and otherwise, that we will have these set of tools that we will enforce free and fair trade for everyone that does business with us. Otherwise, you don't get market access. But if you do, and it's going to be as good a market access as we get to your country, we would, right now, I think it's worth considering, but we would have to take on, and could legitimately do so, the unilateral task of conditioning market access on free and fair trade as the world's trade policeman. And that's worth considering, I think.
Interesting concept. It really does fly in the face of, first we had GATT, which is the Gentlemen's Agreement on Trade and Tariffs. So it really flies in the face of all of our trade policy post-World War II.
It does. It'd be a big change.
That's a big step to take. I think you got to take a few steps first before you do that.
Yeah. But the thing is, trade is more, you know, there's more than tariffs and quotas going on.
Oh, yes.
There's of course, these VATs, there's currency manipulation, there's state, you know, massive state subsidies by these autocratic state capitalism countries like China. And the GATT and WTO system pretends they don't exist and pretends free trade is only about tariffs. And there's no real prospect of them moving to get to true free and fair trade by including these other modern mercantilist trade cheating issues. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the ones who benefit from the trade cheating are unlikely to agree in a consensus to change things.
Yeah, they think the system's great.
It's problematic. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, interesting topic. It's certainly relevant. We're going to have to see what Trump is going to do about it. He certainly is very aware of the problem. I mean, he ran on this, and who would have thought that this could really be a campaign issue? But certainly in the Rust Belt, the Brexit states, it won him between that and the EPA poll. It won him Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. I mean, those states.
Right.
And Ohio.
It shifted a lot of the prior Democratic working class votes to the Republican side. And Steve Bannon spoke at CPAC last week talking about an epochal shift in political alignment, where the Republicans not only have the small government conservatives and the social conservatives and the libertarians, but they also have the economic nationalists.
Yeah.
Now, you could describe the economic nationalists in whatever way you want. I mean, part of it is white working class, part of it is middle class, whatever. But that's the segment that's up for grabs that the Democrats left behind as they become a college educated white and minority coalition.
Yeah.
And so who wins the economic nationalists / working class is going to govern. And so they're the swing voters, in my view, these days.
I don't think they're so swing anymore. I think the Democrats have ceded them to the Republicans. It's up to the Republicans to hold on to them and deliver.
It's iffy in this way, because the Republican leadership are not with the economic nationalists. They're still with the globalists.
All right.
The Ryans and the McConnells.
Very true.
And that's why they had a hard time getting them before. On the Democratic side, there's not a big move to win them back. I mean, you do have people like Tim Ryan, a congressman of Ohio,
true,
and, you know, a few Democrats in, you know, the industrial Midwest that would like to, but they're a vast minority. And to the extent the Dems are talking trade issues, a lot of it is social justice, not economic issues. So they have to rethink if they want them back. But if Trump goes away and Paul Ryan and McConnell come, you know, are the leaders, they may have less to say to the working class economic nationalists, too, because they haven't been converted yet.
That is a great point. That is a great point you make. But right now, as long as Trump is there, they're firmly in the fold. And for the midterms, it's going to be a bloodbath for the Democrats, because they're going to continue to lose representation in the Midwest, by all accounts. Especially if Trump delivers these jobs from all these companies that are pledging to invest and open factories there. You know, that's been the big surprise. I don't know if they're going to deliver or not, but on paper, it seems like a lot of companies are claiming to be investing and opening factories there, Michael.
Yeah, could be. I actually haven't explored the credibility of that data yet, but very well could be. Yep.
Well, if they don't want to find themselves 5:30 one morning, the subject of a major Twitter storm, I think they better do it.
Right.
Right. They're going to be very sorry.
Overall, though, we've got to shift the cost to make it advantageous to produce here.
Yeah, of course.
Because there's thousands of factories. We, as voluminous as Trump's tweets are, the factories do exceed the possible tweet number.
Well, we've got several.
And so if we shift the cost,
Yeah, I agree with you. We got several things going for us. Water, cheap water, and we've got cheap energy. So if we can cut the taxes and cut back and roll back regulation, I think that it'll help bridge the gap, don't you?
Yeah, and we're still the most innovative economy in the world,
right.
Even though too often we innovate here and make it there. We're very innovative. Plus, oh, by the way, we are proximate to, i.e. within, the wealthiest, biggest consumer market in the world. We know it. We are in it. We don't have to ship overseas to get to it. Those are significant advantages.
Correct. And the capital right now is flowing here away from the rest of the world. So very important issues.
What?
Well, Michael, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you. So people want to find out more about these issues, your positions, and how you're working to try to make some progress here in the nation's capital. Where's the best place to find you?
Prosperousamerica.org is our website, and people can sign up to receive information and alerts on important breaking topics. That's not to donate. It's just to get information. And prosperousamerica.org is where to go.
Excellent. And we will have a link to your site in the show notes to this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. If you have any questions, comments about this interview or others, email me at kl@kerrylutz.com. That's kl@kerrylutz.com. Twitter feed is @kerrylutz. Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Michael, it's great speaking with you again, and keep up the fight.
My pleasure. Thank you. We'll keep fighting.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.